Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Should GLP-1 weight loss medication like Wegovy and Zepbound cost thousands of dollars? We don't think so. Try LifeMD.com helps provide insurance access to the leading GLP-1 medications. Visit TryLifeMD.com and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0. Listen to Bridget's story after losing 55 pounds and using her insurance for coverage.
LifeMD helped me get covered with my insurance. Finding out that it was covered was huge. I've lost 55 pounds. I am so much healthier now that I've lost the weight. I would never be able to do it without them.
Get started today and check your eligibility for GLP-1 medication with copays as low as $0 at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Welcome in, everybody. It's Kostaki Economopoulos, host of All Pro Lines, the podcast. We got a little off-season football stuff to talk about. Our boy Brian Miller is going to join us, and we'll introduce a new premise to you as well. I'm excited about all those things. I'm just back from Erie. Man, it was great. The hotel was nice. The town was cool. The walk to work was, you pass all this scene, and the Rib Fest had the streets closed down, and there's a marina, and I don't know. I the crowds were smart and supportive and into it. It's this it's a place called Keller's, which is a comedy, a magic and comedy club. The one in Hermosa out here is comedy and magic. This one is magic and comedy. It's magic first. It's done by a magician, and my opening act was a magician, and he did close-up magic for the audience at the bar before and after the show. It's just got like this nice flair about it. It was a great club. I loved it. It was really a pleasure. I slept like it was my job. I was slept in both of the days I was there. Like during the day, I woke up and was like, wow, I cannot believe that is the time. I just let myself sleep till whenever I wanted, and it was jarringly indulgent. So I'll take it. I also got lots of steps in. I averaged north of 10,000 a day when I was there. I walked around the marina and walked to and from the gig, which is a pretty good walk. So that was good. I don't know, just feeling good about stand-up. And I played some cards on the way home last night and crushed that. So I've just been enjoying my little doings as of late. And today I shift gears. I'm doing a podcast with my friend Brian Miller. Be out here in a minute. And then I'm turning the page and I'm gonna be super dad all week. I got kids every day for the most of this week. So that'll be really nice to hang with them both. The big one is out of school and the little one is still in school. So we'll figure out a balance and do some fun stuff together. Life's good. We'll get to Brian in a minute. Let's do a few jokes. You gotta do the jokes.
The 2 minute drill.
Poor Bill Belichick had to explain to his girlfriend who George Went was. That's the thing. That's why I don't think I could date anybody under 40. I mean, what do you talk about? What are you doing? The only thing they have in common is never seen the Browns win a Super Bowl. They got engaged, reportedly. This is what happens when you have so many rings. You just give them out to the kids you meet in life. It's ridiculous. Belichick is 73. The fiance is 27. 73 to 27 makes 28 to 3 seem pretty close by comparison. That's not a May-December romance. That's a May-Jurassic period romance. She calls him baby, not because he's cute, but because she has to feed him soft foods. She said he loves that she's energetic and fun and never heard of Spygate. It's a big age gap, ladies and gentlemen. That's what I'm saying. Even Lawrence Taylor's like, damn, Bill, that girl too young for you. Is that racist? Can I do a vaguely black guy accent? Probably not. All right, I'm canceled. Canceled from what? You're safe from being canceled if you never made it in big time show business. Did Belichick propose the way he does in press conferences? No emotion, no explanation. When she said yes, he just muttered, "We're on to the honeymoon." Is he romantic? Can you imagine the Belichick pillow talk? Is it just breaking down film? Here's where you lost the leverage in the argument. Poor footwork. All right, we'll address this in the offseason. Here's the big news. They're going to let current NFL players play flag football in the Olympics. Is this a good idea? Do we want Tyreek Hill's sperm to go global? Is that? I don't know if that's a good. That doesn't seem like a good idea. Flag football has no blocking or tackling. So, like a Jets game. The only question, will there be any flags left in 2028 after three more years of throwing flags when everyone gently touches Mahomes? The new Pope is from Chicago. If anyone understands suffering and blind faith, it's a Bears fan. He's replacing the communion wine with cans of Old Style. You see, that's... The Ravens cut creepy massage recipient Justin Tucker and called it a football decision. They called it a football decision because doing the right thing would set a dangerous precedent. This year, the Rams drafted from a fire station to honor the LA firefighters. The Jets should have drafted from a police station because their decision makers need to be arrested. You see what they did with the jokes. Andreas and I went to the draft, by the way, in Green Bay. Stayed at our friend Dean's house. We actually did it. I don't know if you guys remember this, but a year ago, I was talking about how the draft was. Andreas and I were in Detroit for the draft, and I went to surprise him when I got home. I was going to book the hotel because there's one casino that has poker in the whole region. And it's a great little poker room, and it's also the hotel where the Packers stay on the nights before their home games. I guess they want to corral these knuckleheads and keep them in one place. It's not a particularly fancy place. It's called Oneida. It's like this little Native American casino and hotel. It's like $100-something a night, $120 a night. It's like a regular nothing kind of place. So I reached out to them. It was $1,800 a night for the draft, and it was sold out a year in advance. So Andreas fumbled around and found like Motel 6 for $350 a night or something. And we found a couple of other things that were just outrageously expensive. There's something we originally booked. It was almost $600 a night. And then we ended up talking about it on Bob and Tom. And we got a couple of emails. So we reached out to Dean, who offered to let us stay at his place, and we dragged Dean around all over Green Bay and bought him drinks and sat in his backyard and drank whiskey and beer and talked about life, and we went to all the fun stuff. He took us to his favorite like greasy burger joint, and we went to his favorite pub, and it was awesome. I gotta say, it was awesome. It was great. So thank you, Dean, if you're listening. We appreciate you, man. And actually Dean's daughter lives in Erie, and I weaseled her and her boyfriend into the club to see the show on Friday night. So it's nice when you can kind of give back to the world that's given to you. It's cool. Couple of quick announcements and then we'll talk to Brian Miller. I just finished my last sort of regular land gig. I'm doing a couple of cruise ships this summer. I'm looking forward to that. And I got a bunch of bookings in the fall. A lot of that stuff's not even on Kostaki.com yet, but that's where you go to find all the info. I'm going to be doing Belterra. I just booked finally booked a gig in Albuquerque at the brand new club there in town. Hyenas. I'm doing some of these tour dates for the Ron Sexton Memorial Tour with Greg Hahn and Bob Zaney. Those are going to be fun. Doing some cool little theaters and casinos and stuff. So all that info will be out there soon. I'll figure out how to post it and get it together. And if you're not following me on the socials, do that. If you're listening to this and you're not following, jump on. Try to build an army, and it's growing very glacially. It's less of an army and more like a coup. That joke needs a rewrite. Let's see if we have anybody in the comments. Ron Milford, what's up, buddy? Good to see you. All right. You know him. You love him. He's a great stand-up and one of the great writers in the American comedy universe. Put your hands together. A nice, warm internet welcome to Brian Miller.
Hello. Wow. You stayed with a fan in Green Bay. You never met him before.
Never met him before. No. In fact, very often we met people when we were out walking around. It was mostly just Andreas and I walking around for 3 days.
Sure.
Well, where are you staying? We're like, we're staying with a guy we never met. And they were like, wait, what?
I mean, it's a risk. It's not.
It's a risk.
It's an average chance, right? Because the guy listens to you and likes you, and you know, theoretically, you're
there is some filtering. Yeah, right.
Yeah. But it's, I don't know. There's people that I get along with pretty well in small doses that might turn out to, or you know. You're like, why do you have all these deep freezers in your garage?
Oh, yeah, I know. We did a lot of jokes about being murdered. Yeah, we definitely did that. But hey, you and I met in a similar situation, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was less likely that I was a murderer because I was a new comedian who was obviously desperate for a gig. So you would have been the more likely murderer, but like you'd been around a long time. Like I had, you know, Ben Sandell and Lewis Lee, a lot of people could vouch for you.
Yeah, well, no, we weren't going to murder each other. But we did launch a trip of 5-6 days of being in a car together for many hours a day, having never met.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't aware of it being murdered, but it had the potential to be like 5 of the more annoying days of your entire life for either one of us. It was possible. It was on the table.
You and I drove around North Dakota, Wyoming. Where were we?
Started in North Dakota, zigzagged down to South Dakota, and then went through Wyoming to Montana, as I recall. I believe we ended in Sheridan, Montana, I think.
Holy shit.
Somewhere in Montana. Because you flew back from Montana, but I drove back.
So you had to drive. Yeah, that's right. Driving,
I drove 14 hours back to Minneapolis.
The beginning of a beautiful friendship.
It was fun right away, I will say. You know what I mean? It was like pretty much in the first day, it was like, oh, this is gonna be fun.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, comics, there's kind of a shorthand with comics. Like, most comics are great. Every once in a while you meet a comic who's kind of a douche, but for the most part they're good folks, you know.
Yeah, or even if you're like, you're kind of annoying, but I know your type and I get you and I can totally roll with it, you know what I mean? People where you're like,
right,
I wouldn't choose to like invite you to my house for Christmas, but like, you want to be the bits guy? Okay, I'll be the bits guy. Or you want to be the politics guy? I'll be the politics guy. Like whatever, I can roll with it. You know,
the bits guy. Oh,
the bits guy. The bits guy is the one that I can have the most fun with for the day. But like the bits guy on day three, if it's just like every goddamn thing you say is like, what if the Queen of England said that? You're like, I'm just trying to find a gas station, man.
That's hilarious. So yeah, so I ended up, it wasn't on purpose, but I ended up, I was reporting to Bob and Tom about Detroit, and I just sort of backed into the story of how, you know, we try to go every year and we already looked and we couldn't find a room for the following year. Sure. And so Tom immediately shifted into, well, you should stay with a listener. And,
It's just good content, regardless of what happened.
right. And I just got a hilarious email from Dean, and there was one other very short email invite. And so I reached out to Dean. He didn't respond in a week because he only checks his email about once a week.
I found out later. Honestly, I think that's I like that.
He's still working. He's an older guy. He lives by himself. He lives in this like sweet little, you know, suburbia, and he's got a big backyard with a garden, and he's bitching about the rabbits eating his stuff he's planting, and he's got all the feeders for squirrels. And so he called me back. I was actually in a poker room, and I walked outside to chat with him for a minute, and it was a Sunday afternoon, and he was sipping whiskey and then heading to the grocery store. And I go, what you you sip whiskey and then go to the grocery store? He goes, oh yeah, every Sunday I go to the grocery store. He goes, I sip before and I drink after. I'm like, oh, okay. All right. This sounds like our kind of guy. So we, you know, we met up with Dean and we did a lot of sitting in the backyard, sort of pre-gaming and sipping whiskey and whatnot. And then we would get in an Uber, which was like $9 to go over to all the craziness that was happening with the draft. And we went into Lambeau and wandered around, took pictures with the Vince Lombardi statue. And, you know, it was just a sea of people in green shirts, hammered and talking football. It was great.
Yeah. And Green Bay's, I mean, I begrudgingly say this as an obvious rival. And, it's cool. It's a cool market. It's a cool town. Like, if I wasn't a Vikings fan, if I was a Bengals guy and I was an AFC guy, as a pretty neutral, I'd be like, oh, yeah, this is awesome. And I like the town. I've done comedy there a few times. It's a fun town to do comedy in.
Right.
It's fun to poke at them a little bit about the Packers thing. But
yeah. Oh yeah, they're so into it. It's almost cartoonish. Like you walk down the row that's kind of across the street from the stadium complex, and it's just a bunch of regular houses, but most of them have some kind of Packers thing going on in the backyard, where there'll be like a bunch of like homemade looking statues.
It's like or, a Korean level of support, you know?
Yeah, like, yes,
are
yes.
You're gonna get in trouble if you don't do this.
Or it's like a football field with the markers and everything and a field and the field goals, and or there'll be like everyone had like a different shtick that was some homage to the Packers. There's something about it that's kind of cool. And it's a little bit like the locals are a little bit frustrated and sad now because some of those homes have been sold to, you know, businesses that are running them as a $20,000 a weekend thing to rent out.
Oh, sure.
So, you know, it's some of it's changed a little, but it reminded me a little bit of Wrigleyville. It's in that it's like everyone who lives near there gives a shit about the Cubs, you know?
I used to live near there. I used to walk down to Wrigley and see the Cubs. With my student ID, you could get tickets. I remember exactly how this went, but I think it was for like the first 2 months of baseball. You could get tickets to any day game at Wrigley Field for like $5 or $9 or something with your DePaul student ID. So there'd be great times where I'd like, they'd be playing a day game and I had a lot of homework to do. I would just bring my homework to Wrigley and I would like do my math homework in the stand. Cause like, I don't know. It's like, listen to the radio, but you're in Wrigley and you're kind of watching the game and you're getting some stuff done. You know, I'm up in the bleachers. I'm not bothering anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. It's a tiny town. Because it's in our psyche as an NFL city, you think of it as being a city. It's not a city.
No, Peoria is much bigger, I feel like, don't you?
Right. Peoria has a skyline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Green Bay, Eastmo and I were just there. And we were driving, the tour manager's like, well, oh, we're not there yet. And I'm like, I mean, we haven't hit the bridge yet, which is where you see most of it. But like, yeah. Yeah, this is it. You know? It's a town. I feel like the people in Green Bay would be radioactive irritating based on how irritating some Packers fans can be in Wisconsin in general. But I find it to be similar to Chicago. People from Chicago are okay. It's the people from like Schaumburg and Oak Park, the real pricks. You know, they're the ones that like are ostensibly like more Chicago, but they're like jerks about it. Like, it's the guy in Oshkosh who's going to give you a hard time in the bar. But the people on the streets of Green Bay are nice.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Everyone couldn't have been any more nice and polite. And, of course, we're wearing Falcons gear, and they want to
– Well, you're like, no threat to anyone, so it's
they want to chat with us. Right. They want to chat with us about that. You guys came up from Atlanta. You know, like, what are you doing here? And because it's such a small town – the number of people who were there was way smaller because you really couldn't come from somewhere else unless you were willing to stay with Dean.
Yeah. I mean, it's,
I saw the
population compared to the population during the draft. And I mean, it was like cartoonish. It was like if my whole neighborhood moved into my house.
Right. You know, like it's the, It was the real life example of why a place that small doesn't get the Olympics, or, you know what I mean? Like, you can't
infrastructure. Yeah.
Right. There's not enough hotels. They're not, I mean, yeah, there's not enough
Luxurians and Holiday Inns and just like basic stuff. Or like in Minneapolis, right. Like it takes a while to fill up our hotel, you know, rooms. And then sure. Our burbs have then giant sections. So you can see in Bloomington, there's a zillion hotels. Whereas like,
right.
It's not like 20 minutes outside of Green Bay. There's a whole bunch more hotels. It's like, no, there's a bunch of nothing. You got to go down to Appleton.
And then I know. And even that's like another tiny little town, really. I mean, yeah right. Yeah. And Andreas and I debated all the things. We actually considered like, well, we could just sleep in Milwaukee and drive up and have day trips or whatever.
Totally. You could absolutely do that.
That's not what we wanted to do. We definitely wanted to just be there. And we were surprised how easy the Ubering was. Everyone was so fast and it was so cheap and it was so always ready and everyone was so kind. All that stuff turned out to be really easy. So that was cool.
I haven't heard any complaints about my friends who live there in terms of, I mean, people, you know, it was busy and everything, but everybody seemed really excited about it. And like, I don't know, nobody seemed bummed about any side effects of it or, you know, like it was smooth for them.
Yeah. And it was fun because anytime anything, you know, like it was, the Bears are up next. Immediately the crowd shifted into a chant. Bears still suck. It was, yeah. I mean, it was kind of fun. I loved it. I'm going to try to go every year. Andreas already booked hotel rooms in Pittsburgh next year. So Pittsburgh's like
be a fun town to have it in though. You know,
Pittsburgh is another good one because it's got the blue collar, gritty, storied football history. Local fans who give a shit with the same kind of passion as the Packers guys, but a bigger city, you know.
The Steelers experience could be very different exactly 1 year from now at the next draft. I mean, depending on how all this Rodgers malarkey goes or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they could have a football hangover. They could just be like, I don't know, we're a Pirates town for like a year. We're like.
Oh, I don't think they want him. I mean, broadly, the fan base.
I think they wanted him. It was like a relationship where two people were like on the rocks and one person wanted to get married. And then the other person was like, nah, I don't know. And then the other person got the first person got more and more desperate and they really wanted to get married. And then finally the other person was like, yeah, I think we can get married. And then as the wedding day nears, they realize, oh no, I was so focused on this pursuit that I didn't realize I don't want this, but now it's happening.
I mean, that's beautifully said. That's kind of sad and heartbreaking.
It's like, and now it's like, and then we're all going to be, I've been at a wedding or two, not many, but most of the weddings I've been to were lovely. And most of the people were happy for a while or are still happy now, but I've been at one or two where you're watching people walk down the aisle and you're like,
I've never seen that.
A sad movie.
I wasn't insightful enough to catch it. I've never been, you could see it in real time. Like,
ooh. Yeah, there's one in particular. I mean, obviously I won't say who it was, but I turned to the person next to him. I won't even say who that was. I'm keeping this undercover. I turned to him and I was like, it was the classic, what do you give it? And the person next to me was like, five. And it turned out so much worse than anyone could have expected, short of like murder.
Oh, how did it end? You got to tell us the ending.
It's too specific. Give it away. I'll tell you off mic. It's a good one. Sorry, everyone listening, but
name too specific. But it didn't
specific, yeah.
But it didn't last.
No. Well, it yet did. That's the intriguing part.
All right. It's a good teaser for me.
It's gonna be, because the funny thing is, it's actually worse to have Rodgers because everyone pretty much agrees that the Steelers are good but not great anyway, and that Rodgers isn't what it used to be, even if he can stay healthy for the whole time, which he probably can't.
Even if he gives a shit, which he probably doesn't.
He's too good to go 5-12. He's not going to go 5-12 if he's healthy. And he's just not. He's not going to do it. He's still pretty darned okay. Okay to good. But he's not great. So you maybe get to the playoffs. Maybe win a wild card game. Lose all your draft status. Now you got no quarterback next year. What you going to do? I mean, it doesn't make sense in the short or the long term. It's really dumb.
You should trade TJ Watt to the Falcons for Kirk Cousins. That's what you should do.
Well, you just want TJ Watt.
Yes.
I'm not getting TJ Watt.
I want Cousins off the books, too. Yeah,
let's go. He's the only reason people are watching the team to some degree.
I know. I read the headline that said an offer on the table for TJ Watt. And I was like, holy shit, they're going to trade TJ Watt. No, they meant they made an offer and he hasn't taken it. Like, it's not enough for him.
Oh, yeah. And he's good. Yeah. Man, the funny thing about Rodgers is, like, it's obvious that he's going to drag this out for a really long time. He's not going to join the team. All these guys are just building up resentment toward him, I'm convinced. In the Steelers locker room, you can't tell me that at least 25% of the people in that were players aren't just getting gradually more and more irritated. But then you've got OTAs starting up. He's skipping those. It's not like he's going to probably just show up on day one of minicamp. I don't know. But you've got the guy who wants everyone to be on the same page as his really specific signal calls and all his change and stuff at the line of scrimmage. You know, he's a guy who history shows really relies on intense familiarity with a certain set of players. And then when he gets that, he can make magic. It's incredible, you know? Jordy Nelson, Devontae Adams, even some guys like MVS who are like fine, but not great, right? But the thing that he needs is that familiarity. And like when those rookie receivers who were good came into the Packers this last year, like Dobbs and Watson, he was just throwing all around them. They weren't on the same page, you know? Well, how are you going to get on the same? It's a team you're going to be on for 1 year, and you're not even showing up for OTAs. Get out of here!
I agree. I'm with Terry Bradshaw. It's a joke.
Go chew bark, as Terry.
Go chew bark. What was the other? There was another little dig. Howl at the moon or something. It was that kind of thing.
I think yeah. Cousins is almost the opposite. Cousins is the guy. Not that he would drag it out. He wouldn't do much of this. But Cousins is like he's not. He's just like technically really sound and he's going to study really hard and he can kind of play Cousins football with a lot of different people around him. You know,
yeah.
I don't think he's as practiced. I think it's interesting that Rodgers is probably one of the most like practice dependent quarterbacks in the league. Like he really needs reps with other players so that they can adjust to him as much as anything else versus your plug and play. Like, you know, good old boy, Gardner Minshew or somebody where you're like, well, he's going to do that Gardner Minshew thing, whoever it is.
Yep. All right, let's do this.
But now it's time for which comes first. Oh, yes, it's time for which comes first. Now tell me, will this happen before that happens? It's time for which comes first.
Kirk Cousins on a non-Falcon roster or two Vikings wins?
Or two Vikings wins?
Yeah.
You mean that he has two wins for the Vikings?
No. The Vikings win two games or Kirk Cousins is on a different team. Which comes first?
Oh, which comes first? Yeah.
You need to hear this again?
I got it. I'm going to which comes first in a while. I got it now. Yeah.
Comes first.
Two Vikings wins. I think two Vikings wins because I think they're going to win like two in the first 4 weeks, you know. But that's a good one though because I think that's tight. It could go either way.
I'll take the opposite. I think they move him to some team before the season starts.
Penix is third on the depth chart right now.
No, he's not. They announced he's the starter and Kurt's the backup and the whole thing.
It was an old clip. I don't know. I don't know.
They're 100% in on
Penix. It's a terrible situation because I don't think Penix is bad, but I don't think he's great. I don't think he's going to be great. And Kirk is, you know, diminished Kirk.
I think he's got a shot at great. I don't know if he's going to get there, but I think that's in the realm of outcomes. I think he's – did you watch him in college? He's got the most beautiful natural throws. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. It's a lot of, Zach Wilson has some pretty deep balls, you know? I don't know, like –
Touche.
I don't trust highlight reels. Every quarterback who's drafted in the NFL, you can show me 9 college plays that make me think they're going to be like Fran Tarkington. 19.
I understand your point. That's a good point. That might be your first good point of your life.
But now I will say though, like it's not one of those guys you watch and you go, oh boy, you know, it's not like a Nathan Peterman situation or you know. But I just think like if you're not, I don't know. I don't think that team's built to have a quarterback who's not better.
He was drafted ahead of Bo Nix, who turned out to be a pretty great quarterback.
I would rather have Bo Nix. And I tell you what, I that's the thing. It's an interesting thing about being a Vikings fan right now is I don't know what I wish would have happened because there's a world where JJ is great. And there's a world where JJ is like, McCarthy, I'm talking about, my guy.
Right, right.
This is a world where he's like as good as Bo Nix. And honestly, that wouldn't be so bad if he's as good as Bo Nix. Like, that could be cool with Kevin O'Connell and that.
Yeah.
I don't know if, like, if I got to wish on a magic lamp, like, if someone said, like, you know, ceiling Bo Nix, I'll give you JJ's exactly as good as Bo Nix, but he's not going to be any better. Do you take that bet? I'd be like, oh boy, I don't know. Because it could be better than that. It could be way better than that.
Right.
It could not, you know? So we've got a real mystery box going on right now. So that makes it easy, I find it easier to be zen about it because you're like, I don't even know if I should be dreading it or thrilled. I'm just like, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's well said too. A mystery box. That is what he is right now. Ceiling, low floor. You don't know what.
We could kind of have to look at that last draft, not this one, but the last one, and be like, oh my God, they were so smart. What an amazing thing they did to get Jordan Addison and J.J. McCarthy in the same draft, and now those guys can play together. And, you know, Kevin O'Connell, you know, is allegedly, and I think, you know, seems to be very good at developing quarterbacks if McCarthy has the raw materials. And, I mean, this could come together to be one of those, like, magic situations. Or it could just be meh. You know, I don't think it's going to be terrible, but it could be kind of meh, you know.
Right.
With Case Keenum on the Texans for a year, kind of. We're not them. At least we're not them, you know. But nobody's like, oh, I better not book any trips deep into January because I might need to be home on Sunday.
Let's get to talk to you, brother. How's life? What's going on with you?
Not bad. I filmed some scenes in an independent movie yesterday.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm going to get killed, but we don't film that in a couple weeks.
Well, you could tell me you're going to get killed and you're going to ruin the end of the movie for me, but you
can't tell me
you got married? That didn't work out?
Oh, no, I'm like, I'm not the star, and I'm like, definitely you're like, oh, that guy's going to get killed. I was cast to be, a guy saw me at a club, and he's like, I'm casting a role for a huge asshole, and I was like, I think you'd be really good for it. And then we would be shooting scenes and be like, all right, ad lib, be a huge asshole. And I would do it. And he'd be like, yeah. Okay.
How do we know you're going to get killed? You walk into the room and go, there's some kind of a noise downstairs. I'm going to go check it out.
I'm just such a huge asshole to a person who's obviously about to snap. But like, I'm like, he's the first person who's going to go. Yeah. But we filmed, the guy wouldn't even mind because he's a delightful guy. But well, there were multiple scene partners here, you know. But one of the guy, my kind of a guy who's in all most of my scenes are with this one other guy in particular, and then the lead, and the other guy is playing a kind of edgy alcoholic, and he is played by a non-edgy alcoholic who's literally the barfly from a favorite bar of this guy, and this guy was like paid in beer, and like he showed up hungover as hell, and he's playing it. He showed up hungover and friendly, but okay, friendly as hell, you know. And then after a couple of Marlboros and four or five Coors Lights, he was like just on his mark. And then he was just out in those Coors throughout the set. And they were like, play drunk. And he'd be like, sure. Hell of a nice guy.
I believe they call that method acting.
Yes. As far as I was whatever the opposite, the Meisner method or whatever.
All right, how do we introduce the new premise?
It's a whole real new premise for you. It's not even just the month.
Yeah, it was kind of a New Year's resolution concept that I fumbled through at the beginning. And then I sort of doubled down and really wanted to commit to. Basically, I wanted to try on some different things. I wanted to try a month of not drinking, a month of super focus on exercise, a month of social media focus, a month of playing poker like it was my job. I wanted to try all these different kind of segments of things. I want to do a month of meditation at some point. I feel like a week is too short and a year 100%. Is too long. So a month is like, oh, you could really try something on for a few weeks and see how it feels to be hyper-focused on something.
Quick question. But like, meditation month next month, and then you find that it's very helpful. Will you keep doing meditation while you do poker month, for instance?
Yeah, that's a great, you know. And actually, this month I ended up sort of doubling up because I did have this weird sort of a few windows where I wasn't working and I didn't have kids, so I definitely embraced the poker thing too. I kind of did two things in one month. So, yeah, I mean, and at the beginning of the year, I was sort of trapped between, like, I didn't start at the beginning of a month, and I was sort of trying all the things that I wanted to get better at a little bit. And I sort of connected to a couple of those and doing those more. So a little more like sitting on purpose and writing stand-up, like instead of it accidentally coming to me, a little more of getting to the gym and a little more of, there were a couple of things that I was like, I really did focus more on that worked. So you and I discussed it and we were like, let's do something for a month. And we knocked it around for a minute. And well, why don't I hand it to you? You said.
Yeah, I came up with this. And even when I came up with it, I'm like, this might be a mistake. But I came up with it. It occurred to me that as you know, as you get old, you listen to the same music a lot. I mean, I certainly do. I think almost everybody does. And unless you're like a super music guy. I'm not a huge music guy. And so I kind of come across new music sporadically, kind of randomly. And I'm often glad that I did. So I was like, my idea was, what if we every day for a month, we listen to an album. This also gives you this gives you a window as to how old we are, that we think in terms of albums. But I think there's something, right. there's a functionality to that, though, which is that, like, just saying, like, I'm going to listen to two new songs by a new artist. It's not quite enough to, like, it's a little too surfacey. I feel like listening to an album, like, listening, you know, we're talking, you know, usually 7 to 11 tracks in a row. You know, like, I spent some time with this artist. Right. So the idea would be an album we can't be familiar with really at all. So, but it could be an artist you're familiar with, but it has to be an album you haven't heard. And then, and no repeating artists. You get one, you know, each artist can only get one. Can be from any stretch, can be brand new, can be old. And then the other little caveat I added in, because I thought this would just be interesting, is that if you had to listen to a couple of albums that I'm really familiar with that you hadn't heard and vice versa, you know, so that it'd be, first off, it gives us each a day or two off or to maneuver around, but also just the, you know, right. I thought there's a couple of albums. I was like, oh, I'd be curious what your reaction is. And it doesn't really work if it, I was like, the reason I'm curious about your reaction is I've heard it a zillion times.
Right. That was that ended up being my favorite part, actually. It's funny. You and I built a list of albums that we kind of like, well, Ava suggested these and.
Yeah, we took suggestions from that.
Yeah. We wanted to get this kind of thing, and I wanted to try these two. And you wanted, and the ones that you suggested were a couple of my favorites. Maybe because you're not a 16-year-old girl. Maybe that's a better way to pick music.
It helps, but, you know.
No, some of the stuff that Ava suggested actually was really interesting, and I'm glad I listened to an entire album of a few of those things. You know,
absolutely, and particularly she suggested Duster. And one of the things I found over the course of this, we had a few recommendations for kind of electronic stuff, including from two of the baristas from the coffee shop that I go to a lot.
Right, right.
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized, chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers. And they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with the healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
It was far and away my favorite among the electronic stuff. Although I did kind of like Soccer 96 a little bit too. But the thing I realized is that I really don't have music on in like the background, like the deep background very often.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's my complaint about those kind of things. It just fades into the
background. And it's great if you like music in the deep background. And so right. What I found was like when I would do, you know, we got to send out some avails or you got to send out some invoices or some emails, some stuff that really is mindless. I would pop on one of the electronic things. And I kind of enjoyed that where it was like, I can't really be listening. Like it's like one third attention. So this electronic thing was cool. But for the most part, I'm either like really listening or I'm like, even if I'm washing dishes, like, well, I'm still really listening because, you know, I don't need that much focus to like wash dishes by hand or whatever. It's pretty simple, right? And right. So then I got bored with stuff, with the electronic stuff and like those are mowing the lawn. I'd be like, get me out of here. I got to have something fun while I mow this lawn, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I agree with that. Right.
Like yard work.
Yeah, a couple of those albums were very much like, if you're doing something that you need, you can't be distracted by lyrics.
Right? Yeah.
It's like, this is just on while I'm doing something that requires some attention, right? Like yeah. If you're
but
driving.
I like that duster for that purpose a lot.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't connect with it that much, but I see the appeal. Like a couple of those were, they felt like they were like Enya plus, you know, it was like, it was like that kind of soothing, relaxing kind of background music. But yep. I realized in the sort of this experiment, well, first of all, what I noticed the most was my inclination just from my training in life was to skip a song and like go to another thing. Like, oh, I don't love this song. I'm moving on to the next thing. And I had to kind of train myself like, nope, you committed to 11 songs from this person. Let's do yep. it, you know, sit back and take it in, my friend. And so that was really, I think that was a really refreshingly different way to listen than what I've been doing. I haven't really listened to albums since I had CDs, you know?
Right. I mean, it's a different way of listening now. Whereas like now when say the new Wet Leg album is coming out on the 11th of July, like, oh, I'll buy that right away. And I will absolutely put that on and like listen to that album. Like for sure. You know,
those Dirty Girls.
I love Wet Leg. I have tickets to see Wet Leg in September.
Spotify already advertised that they're coming to my town to play. Like, there's a that
they're
that,
fun, like, dude. I saw them last time they were in town, which was maybe 2-3 years ago.
What was the lyric that I wrote down from them? I went to school and I got the big D.
Yeah, on the chaise long. Oh, they have some way that song "Wet Dream" is like delightfully filthy. But my favorite line in that is. He said, baby, do you want to come home with me? I got Buffalo 66 on DVD, which is such a specific reference to an indie movie called Buffalo 66 that came starring Vincent Gallo, written and directed by Vincent Gallo, co-starring Christina Ricci. It's like a big hit in like the mid to late 90s.
You're the only movie nerd thing. Who would even know what that reference means.
It's a really deep cut, the idea of a guy saying to a girl, like, I got, but it's like, it's kind of a misogynistic indie movie, so it's kind of a perfectly hilarious movie for a guy to try to hit on a girl with. those projects.
So I was, I among other things that I did, I listened to, because I pitched this to you and you're like, I already know that kind of stuff. There was one, I wanted to go back and see if I remembered that the Boston album was, what, every song was great. Do you remember? I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. If you told someone this is Boston's greatest hits, I think they'd be like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, I went back and it was astounding. Like, to have a song that like really grabs you is kind of a miracle to me. Like, to be able to create a song that's original and different and totally like grabs you is amazing. And to get one of those on an album is cool, or two. But Boston's album, the first one they did, is 8 songs. It's somewhat short, but every single song is fucking great. It's totally catchy and different. Key, right? It's amazing.
It's not like overdoing it. Like the 8 songs, it makes me think of the, I was trying to think of other albums that I think are like every song albums. There's not that many. Like John Prine's first record is like, you're like, oh, I know every one of these songs, you know, like every single one is just absolute banger. Like even Dylan doesn't really end. And well, I guess a couple of Highway 61, if you're into Dylan, there's a couple like Highway 61 and Bringing It All Back Home, where you're like, boy, I don't know. If someone told me to cut one, it'd be hard, you know?
Right,
Cake's Fashion Nugget. I know we listen to Comfort Eagle, which I was a little more familiar with, but Fashion Nugget, I think, is one of those like, I'll just put it on and leave it. I'm not turning that up. Odelay by Beck, I think, is
that was one of my takeaways. I didn't realize how much I love Cake. I thought I liked Cake, but I like went deep diving into some Cake.
They're a lot of fun. I was thinking about them. They're like, they teeter on the brink of being a novelty band while also being sincere in a way that can only have come from the 90s.
Yeah, it's almost like novelty, because it's so like the way that he belts out the songs is so cartoonish, and yet
his singing method is like this weird half rap thing, and then you got a trumpet player in a rock band in the 90s, and they're constantly doing the I can't think of the little thing, and their percussion instruments are often almost like carnival things, even though they're also playing electric guitar. And it's like really ironic, but really sincere. And the lyrics are like really detached, but also not. And just, it's deeply 90s in a way I really like. Yeah.
I love it. I love Cake. And Wookie Foot was the other one that
I thought that was so funny.
I thought I liked, and I went on a deep, one day at a poker table, I listened to 4 Wookie Foot albums in a row. And it was just,
I assume you started losing money.
I love this stuff. It's so, and
you know, it's like,
what's fascinating with them, the further back you go, the more reggae it gets. Because I don't know if you listen enough to, they have a crazy range. Like from one song to another, you almost can't believe it's the same band. And then like as you go back in their archives, and if you go back in the years, it gets more and more reggae, which is so weird.
I like to imagine you and Andreas wandering around at a Wookiee Foot concert with like all these white dudes with dreadlocks, and it is like that just like mud covered, you know, just all the I don't know if you're familiar with that scene, you know, nitrous balloons and whatnot. It's a whole thing.
No, I have no idea. I just completely found it by accident. In fact, when I first found a Wookiee Foot song, I just thought it was some tiny band that just like backed into one great hit. And then I like sort of exploring, like their stuff is good, man. I really like it. It's playful and upbeat and rocking and a little country sometimes and a little reggae. Yeah,
it has a little crossover with Widespread Panic, and I think there's that those scenes have a little. Wookiee Foot's a little more druggy and out there and whatever, but Panic has a similar like following in terms of like jam band following.
Oh, really? I wouldn't even put those two even remotely.
Not into the sound like, but like, just like there's like a Wookiee Foot vibe. There's like a Wookiee Foot scene kind of thing, you know.
I had no idea. It's totally totally a world. See, that's one of the things. That's why this was an interesting experiment. Last night, when I went to my favorite little poker room, there was a bit of a traffic issue because there was a band at SoFi. They sold out on Saturday and they added a Sunday show at SoFi Stadium. Yeah. And I've never heard of them.
Sure. Like, who was it? You remember?
I could look it up, but it was like, it's like a goth looking band with really young kids.
Sometimes it'll be like a K-pop band and you're like, well, I'm not an 11-year-old girl, so I'd never know.
It's a K-pop kind of thing.
But I do, but also I understand that there's always a boy band or a K-pop band or whatever. Like, you know, there's always a thing that like preteens are into that me as a childless, it's like good that I don't know. Like, if I knew, you should, like, send the cops over to interview me. Like, why does this guy so familiar with this band?
But it is kind of jarring to, like... Like, there was a... I don't know the name, but it was, like, a Mexican country singer that came and did three nights at SoFi. And every night after the show, there would just be a sea of Latino people coming into the casino with cowboy hats on. It was, like, a thing I've never heard of that sold out SoFi Stadium three nights in a row. That's a giant thing. It's amazing
to be disconnected
from the culture that you're in the middle of.
Well, it reminded me of, one night my wife and I were going to the opera, and the opera in St. Paul is three or four blocks down from Excel Center where they play the hockey games and stuff. That night, I don't know, when it was not a hockey game. It was a rodeo at the Excel Center, like a big national, you know, the big national touring rodeo. And so everyone was using the same parking lots, and we were stopped at like a red light waiting. As you can imagine, there was a ton of foot traffic downtown because there's two huge sold out events. The opera seats like 2,000 people or whatever, 1,500. And then the rodeo is like 5,000 or whatever. And I'm sure other stuff going on, but everybody at the corner, you could tell, like, oh, you're going there and you're going there. It was like, you're there.
Oh, right. There, yeah. Yeah. Right.
It was also funny that, like, clearly neither group had any idea that the other thing was happening near them. It wasn't like the opera people were like, well, right, it was going to be rodeo traffic. You know, it was like, we were living in, and even though obviously it's not that you can't like both, but like, for the most part, it was like very different demographics in the same city, you know?
Right.
Completely oblivious to these two huge events.
That's fascinating. And yeah, my favorite card room is kind of, it's almost tangent to SoFi. So I have to kind of keep an eye on the schedule. Sure. And it's really fun to see the people who come in there before and after. Like the Beyonce crowd was good looking.
I bet.
There's some people with money, black and white and cowboy hats. And like,
best, if I had to pick like the best looking crowd.
Dressed up.
It's not going to be like kid, like a bunch of kids, you know, because she perhaps has like an all range. She's kind of an all demographic, but you think then just like skewing pretty significantly toward ladies. Like, that's going to be a good bet.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift's going to be the same lady over and over and over again. But like her songs over, over.
Nice. Over. We had a Taylor Swift album on our list. Would you, you didn't, I know. Not your cup of tea. I'd put it in the top half of the things on their list.
Now, I'm sure it's some of my inherent 90s kid counterculture thing. But also, it's not even that she's the worst. She's just so omnipresent. And it's so not that interesting. It's just so, like, the Olivia Rodrigo album is so much better than that Taylor Swift album. And the idea that I, like, can't escape from Taylor Swift, that I could accidentally, potentially miss Olivia Rodrigo. I mean, she's also pretty famous. But... it's just preposterous. It's just so, you know, Taylor Swift to me is Epcot Center. It's a really incredible simulation of something real. And if you don't mind knowing that whatever it is completely unreal, I bet you can have a good time. But I'm not in Japan. I'm in Orlando. And that guy, that waiter's Chinese, by the way. Not
Oh, I enjoyed that very much.
That's my Taylor Swift summation.
So when I posted about the Boston album, I got a bunch of, well, you never listened to Back in Black. So I went back and I listened to a few of those kind of albums.
Like AC/DC, none of them. Back in Black?
Yeah, none of Back in Black. As soon as I read that, I was like, oh shit, that's right. That, and I went back and I listened to that album. That one has a few songs that are a little like, all right.
Every AC/DC,
I could live without that one.
Three amazing songs, four really fun songs, and a few skippable ones. I mean, my favorite quote, maybe of all time in all of music, was this: somebody was interviewing it wasn't the singer, one of the guitarists for AC/DC, and he said, "You know, all the critics say that we have 11 albums that all sound exactly the same, and that's not true. We have 12 albums."
Do you remember the song "Giving the Dog a Bone"? That's one of those where I'm like, it's just the same phrase over and over and over.
Well, they're also, I mean, every every lyric, everything is exactly at the, it's like the same pitch every time. It's like,
yes,
actual innuendo.
Yeah, it's the opposite of Wookiee Foot. Every song, you know exactly what band it is. It's right down Main Street.
But it's also what makes them amazing, right? It's like,
I agreed. I'm a fan. I don't mean to disparage them.
Right. But it's like, yeah. It's interesting that, like, I find artists like that have more likelihood of gaining traction in the culture in general than somebody who's a little bit more of a chameleon, even though not even chameleon, but even just somebody with like a pretty broad range. Because like I kind of prefer people with the broad range, and it obviously sounds superior to have a broad range. But at the same time, you might, you know, there's like film directors that you don't even, you like a film that they made, but you don't even know that it's them. It's just a really well-made movie. But then if you watch a Michael Bay movie, you're like, well, I didn't love it, but man, that was a Michael Bay movie. Like, that looked like Transformers 9 or whatever. And it sometimes, like, just like always being the most version of yourself is like the best way to like get a hold.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also it's incredibly limiting.
My other takeaway was, you introduced me to a band called Woodbox Gang, which I have never heard of, and I love them. I totally see why you love them, and that's my biggest find from your, you know, from our month of exploring.
And everyone out there, listen to the Woodbox Gang. There are a bunch of alternate universes where Woodbox Gang is not famous. They were never going to be a famous band, but there's a lot of realities with slightly different outcomes of things that happened where they were like a pretty popular, pretty successful kind of underground alt country type band.
I could totally see that. In fact, are they largely unknown?
Well, here's what happened. So the Woodbox Gang is my second favorite band of all time behind the Talking Heads. And you can't compare the two bands in any way. They couldn't be farther apart. So it's pointless to compare the two. But the difference is, I'm not really good friends with David Byrne. I'm quite good friends with the Woodbox Gang. I was at their third show or their fourth show ever. Some friends of mine saw them playing in the corner of a booby sandwich shop for free sandwiches when they just moved into back to town from Florida. And they were like, I swear to God, these guys we saw at Boobies were really – not Boobies. That's the local place. One of those – it wasn't a Subway, but it was like – it was literally like a national branch. I forget the name of it, but like a Blimpies or something like that. And they were like, but they were like actually good. So Woodbox were playing their first coffee house show, which is that they were getting like $50. And so me and my then girlfriend and my buddies went and saw the first coffee house Woodbox Gang show. And we were like, oh my God, these guys are amazing. They put out an album that was like real handmade and with a lot of fun songs called Trash Can Americana. Back when it was just three guys. Then they expanded, they got more instrumentation, and then they released Wormwood, and then the album that I played or that I gave you, Born with a Tail.
But yeah, they're all great. I saw that last night. Yeah. Yeah.
It's the lyrics are really like some of the best lyrics you'll ever hear. They're like deep and funny and arch and strange. Kind of pagan and religious at the same time sometimes,
and yeah, dark and dirty and twisted, yeah, and playful and folksy and rocking. Yeah, it's this, fun.
That is, I always say Woodbox Gang is the, if someone said what's Southern Illinois like, which is where I went to high school, and that's where the Woodbox Gang, Hugh and his brother Brian, who's the original bassist, and then Alex Kurt, who's the guy with the real smooth country voice who sings some of the songs, they're all from, everybody's from Southern Illinois, and that's where I went to high school after being born in Kentucky. That's Southern Illinois. If I had to like give one thing to somebody to describe Southern Illinois, it would be the Woodbox Gang.
This is another lyric I scribbled down. I never kissed a girl until I went to college. I never kissed a boy until I went to jail.
I never kissed a girl until I went to college and she got drunk and cheated on me. And I never kissed a boy until I went to prison for murder in the first degree.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. I know every lyric to every Woodbox Gang song.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah,
I was killing every grain cell with a cleaner for the kitchen in the hopes I'd find the depths of my depression. Somebody saved my life. Pose as a kitchen cleaner salesman. That's on a different. That's on Oh Woman off of Wormwood. I'm going to see the Woodbox Gang. I have tickets to them. They have a brand new album coming out called, I believe the name of the album is Brown Cane Toad. Brand new album. It's coming out in. Well, we're going to see them on June 13th. So I think the album should be out by the 13th. First new album in 13 years. Because Hugh ran into a little trouble, lead singer, my buddy, and spent a few years in Leavenworth. And for totally nonviolent, didn't hurt anybody at all. Well, he's not great with finances and computers, let's say, but he's a lovely, truly lovely man that I've had some just great times with. He's like one of the most fun, funniest, like quiet, humble guys to hang out with. But then he's got all these crazy, weird ideas. And so he went away. That's why the band broke up, because the band, they were gaining a lot of traction. And then after Born with a Tail, Jello Biafra, the lead singer of the Dead Kennedys, who has a record label called Alternative Tentacles, heard them. And Jello really liked them. And so Jello had them come out and re-record Drunk as Dragons, I think, with a bunch of different tracks, and then released it on
that last night too. Yeah. All right.
And they were playing with a bunch of big acts. And, you know, there was a world where they could have been like opening for like Jason Isbell and people like that. And then, you know, things were all up in the air and crazy. And that's when things kind of reached their fever pitch. And then Hugh had a sabbatical and wrote some amazing songs in jail that he describes in this great video. He didn't have anything to drum or anything with to do a beat with. So he would walk around the track in jail, and he would walk and shuffle his feet, and he would find an interesting rhythm that he liked to shuffle his feet to. And then he would write that. And then he would pen it, write it all out in a letter, and he'd send it to Alex. And then Alex was playing those songs live. I would hear him while that he was writing on the prison track while he was in jail.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
But they're so back. They've written a whole new album together.
So when you go see them, will there be 45 people there? Is it 450? Like, what? How are they doing?
Yeah, like we saw them last year for the Eclipse party. They played, like, they have a fan base all over. There was a time when if you went to Chicago to a Woodbox Gang show, you'd see a couple of 300 people at least, and it was building. Go to Denver, go to New York. I mean, they were building a cult fan base, and because of that, still do have people all over who are like, every now and then you like hear a reference to it, or somebody like, I saw Woodbox Gang bumper sticker in like Boise or something, but pretty small because it was so long ago now. It was really pre social media, really. I mean, a lot of it was the beginning of the internet. In fact, they have a great song called .com Machine about an internet predator that's like hilariously of its time, not like as musically, but like the whole perception of the internet. But it's also pretty the same. But they
it's yeah, like when Dana Gould went away to write for
2007 or 8.
Okay. It's like when Dana Gould went away to write for The Simpsons.
Yeah. But the show when we went to see them at the Eclipse show last year, it was supposed to be an outdoor event and probably would have had 750 people in it at least. But it was rain and whatever, and we managed to get into the theater that they put it in, which is a theater we're going to see them in now. But like that theater will be completely like, people will be standing in the lobby listening to that band.
That's cool.
See, that's crazy. When we were at the Eclipse show, by the way, we're looking around, and I see people I've known for years, but I saw people I've never seen before, including like teenagers and people with, a couple people with like their kids, because it was like an all ages theater, all singing the lyrics to these songs that I remember hearing. Like they were the house band at the bar that was my bar when I lived in Carbondale as a newspaper editor. So it was like every once a month, they'd be like, all right, Woodbox time. And we'd go see, and they play new songs, and everybody'd be like, oh, that was a brand new one. And then we'd all have it memorized, you know, a couple of shows later, and everyone would
go, that's cool, man. I love that. I love all that.
Yeah. It was one of those things where part of me thinks like, oh, I only think they're so great because I was there and it's nostalgic. It's tied up in my youth and stuff. But when I play the Woodbox Gang, especially Born with a Tail and Wormwood, those two albums, for people, they're like, holy shit, this is really good.
Yeah, I sent it to Glenn, and he was like, oh, whoa, I like this. Yeah.
I tell people, spread the word, because they're still out there. And, like, when people hear them, they're like, damn. And, like, that's a band that I would say a month has not gone by that I haven't listened to the Woodbox Gang, like, not just a song, but an album or a stretch of songs since 1999.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm a fan. But my other takeaway from the whole experience was, I'm such a like an old guy. Like I've never had a paid music subscription thing before.
Yeah.
So I got Spotify, and I love it. I love that you could just play any song you want, any album. Well, you know what I didn't realize is that you can play any book you want. I didn't realize they had books. And I've actually been thinking I want to listen to more books.
It's really bad for artists is the reason I don't do it.
Is that right?
Yeah. You get jack shit. All those authors get nothing for those books to be streamed.
Well, then why are they on there?
Because their publishers put them on there, and they can't do anything about it. Publishers get The publishers get a tiny amount of money. The authors
get you're getting pennies on the
same thing. The musicians and the comics are all getting screwed too. When you look at what Spotify pays per play versus what SiriusXM pays, I mean, I'm not kidding people. Believe me when I say it. Spotify maybe pays one quarter of a penny, and SiriusXM plays $14.
It's now, why is there such a gap there? Because I've found that to be true.
Is true. Because we can look at our royalty statements and see it, right? Like when Sirius is an older model. It's based more on radio. Sirius is based in a time when artists were treated equitably, and Spotify is a tech bro company. When you listen to Spotify, what you're doing is helping. You're discovering artists who get no money so that Daniel Ek can have another yacht. You're literally giving money to a Swedish billionaire.
Wow.
So that's my anti-Spotify, right? Because it's incredibly corrosive to artists. And so then what happens is then it shifts the whole model. And this is what, I mean, the cat's out of the bag at this point. But then it becomes, okay, well, I'll just give away all my art for free all the time. And then the way I'll make money is by either having a direct subscription service to my fan base or running all over the country as a fucking one-man merch shop selling t-shirts and hats, which I just find demeaning. I think people should be paid for their art. I don't think, especially what if someone's really good at art, but they don't want to pretend to be your friend and they don't want to come to your city and they don't want to do a TikTok fucking dance. I think that person should be paid for their cool ass art, not for their willingness to fucking bang a cymbal like a organ grinder monkey for your pleasure after you already stole their work.
I agree. And in our adult lifetime, we saw that this happened to bands from, you know, Napster was sort of the big famous beginning of this era, right?
Metallica was right, which sucks so hard, by the way.
Yeah, right.
Lars is
right.
Such an asshole.
Right. In the old days, these bands would tour a little bit to support the albums. And based all the money, not all the money, but so much, such a big percentage of the money came from album sales. And that changed. And you basically were getting plays just so you could go sell tickets to live shows, which has always been the stand-up model from the beginning. Like, we never had albums that made money.
Absolutely. And then of course, the middle part is the CD companies in the 90s were screwing the consumer because they're like, oh, a new album? That'll be $19.99 in 1990s dollars, which was really expensive, but like a CD costs almost nothing, right? Like it's the packaging, all that stuff was almost free. And so like if I really think illegal downloading wouldn't have become, maybe it would have anyway, I guess, but I don't think it would have had quite the imperative it did if they weren't like, hey, you like Warrant? Well, we got a Cherry Pie 2's out. And if you want to hear the two songs that you like from the radio, along with the other filler bullshit we put on there, $19.99. And so you have, you know, bands putting out mediocre albums that were $19.99 and so overcharging people. And they're like, fuck it, I'm just going to steal Cherry Pie number 2 for that one song.
Warrant is your go-to example?
Yeah. Warrant was actually the first Warrant album has like multiple good songs, I would say, in addition to Cherry Pie. But the rest of the Warrant catalog is pretty thin. My favorite Warrant song, Warrant,
the is Warrant so catalog. Dumb.
Not only did they not help, they actually made a generation of people dumber. Because, and I include myself in that, because Warrant wrote a song inexplicably called Uncle Tom's Cabin, and it tells the story of a guy and his Uncle Tom, white guys, who go fishing and just see a corrupt sheriff bury a body in a well, and then they have to keep the secret or whatever. And so when I was a kid, you know, you hear of Uncle Tom's Cabin, or you hear someone referred to as an Uncle Tom, and I could never make it make sense because I thought that somehow the Warrant song, because like, why would you call it Uncle Tom's Cabin? Why wouldn't you say Uncle Dave's Cabin or whatever? But they did that. And so I finally like read Uncle Tom's Cabin in college, and I was like, well, goddamn, there is not even a crooked sheriff in this, really. It was so stupid. It was so stupid.
I actually remember that song.
I know a secret that I just can't tell. Yeah, that was it was the closer. It was like their big power ballad. It was kind of their version of like Long Black Veil or like a Johnny Cash, Devil and Down of Georgia. Who's the, where Anna gets shot? Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia. You know, kind of like a murder ballad story song.
Yeah, yeah.
as the B-side to Cherry Pie.
Any other takeaways from this little experiment?
Yeah, a couple. One funny thing that I think speaks to both of us being sort of out of it in general musically in terms of modern music is you're like, hey, I heard of this guy I never heard of, named like Noah Kahan, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
And I listened to it and I was like, oh shit, this is pretty good. I like that Northern Latitudes attitude song or whatever. I like that whole album. This is good. It reminds me of Josh Ritter, who I really like. And then I was talking to like one of the cool baristas and they're like, oh my God, he is so overplayed. You can't escape Noah Kahan. And I was like,
right. Yeah, I know. That's exactly the experience I had. Like,
yeah, I finally have a voice to put to the name Hoshi. I never knew what that was.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's very often I would go and look at the number of plays and I was like, holy shit, I guess I'm not not the first to find this.
Yeah, because I truly had never heard of it, and you sent it to me, and I started playing it, and I immediately I was like, this is good. I did yard work, and I listened to that, and I was like, this is nice. Like, I will listen to that one again.
That was one of my favorite ones.
To again is one I'd always meant to listen to and never got around to, X, Under the Big Black Sun. I love punk. I just never really listened to a lot of West Coast punk, and so I was like, I got to get into X. How did you – did you like that one?
That one didn't grab me, but, you know
– I love every second of that.
It was cool to like go explore some universes that I would have never been in, you know?
Sure,
like,
absolutely. And the other one that I have just never been a Radiohead guy. I've certainly heard a lot of Radiohead. Just never been my thing. But I never sat down and listened to all of In Rainbows, which is supposed to be their best one. And it was nice to be listening to it and be like, oh, I hear in this what everybody else says they hear in radio. You know, like, it's not that I don't think it was there. I just never connected to it. But I thought In Rainbows, I was like, yes, I get it. This woo.
I didn't get it. Maybe I got to go try again.
I loved In Rainbows, but I normally, I listen to Radiohead and I go, wow, that's really good. I can see why people like that. Nah, I don't really want to listen to that again. This doesn't do it for me. But this one, I was like, yep, listen to that one multiple times.
Right.
So yeah, generally, and the other thing, the kind of broad takeaway I found was that I think it was an interesting experiment. I wouldn't do it again. I would do a modified version and try to do like one. I think it would be a good policy to try to do one new album a week, because I didn't like being always having held hostage to not knowing some. Like, it's like you're in a mood or you're trying to get something done and you don't know what you play a band you've never heard of and all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is not the mood. You know what I mean? It's just like,
right.
It's like,
yeah, it's like, I had that.
Your lifestyle at that moment.
Right. It's almost like being handed the assignment of being in this mood for this walk through the airport.
Yes, that's a great way to put it. You're like, but I don't want to be in this mood when I walk through the airport, you know? Whereas, like, obviously, like, with certain ones were like, oh, Fiona Apple, I hadn't really listened to that album, but I love Fiona Apple. Like, I know when I want to listen to Fiona Apple. And some of them, I think, like X, like, I came back at night and I was kind of jazzed up from a show and I didn't want to go to bed. And I listened to that at, like, the exact right time, you know? Because I knew it was going to be West Coast punk. So I, you know, whereas some of them like Duster, which I did end up kind of liking, I just like, I don't know, click, you know, or that Noah Kahan guy, I was just like, I don't know, click. And that one hit me right. And I think some of it was that I liked that. I would have liked that more likely anyway, but sometimes it was like maybe more about my timing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I had that. And a couple times I would just like stop the album. Like, I'm going to listen to this album in a different situation.
Oh, I did that. I started the Phoebe Bridgers album and I was kind of bummed out. And I was like, we'll come back to this when I'm walking around the public instead of sitting in a hotel room by myself. It's good, right. But yeah. Not right now.
Right. Yeah. All right. Here's a teaser for everybody out there listening. I'm doing this again. June will be with Tom Simmons. It started yesterday. And it's try not to eat ultra processed foods for a month.
Oh,
yeah. I listened to a whole book that Tom sent me. He's obsessed with. And man, there's a lot to it. There's a whole universe of scientists working hard to figure out the cheapest way to get you to eat the most yucky foods.
Oh, I mean, we
know this intellectually, but it is way worse than you think.
I eat way less ultra processed foods than the average person. I mean, we go to the farmer's market and get all our vegetables from there. We do all our cooking from scratch. We have an organic garden.
Nice.
That said, you know, when I'm on the road, I'm like, oh, look, Panda Express. Cool.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. And for me, I've got to try to trim out crackers and chips and frozen pizzas. There's a few things that are sort of mixed in with my otherwise pretty good efforts. I'm not a big soda guy. Some of the things are easy. I'm not a big dessert guy. Some of it's easy for me, but some of it's going to be hard. you know.
And the road, it's so hard on the road when your options are so limited. You know, when I'm at home, I can literally be like, oh, I can literally make a Caesar salad. I got homemade Caesar dressing. I got all the, you know, all the ingredients or whatever. I can have a nice, good salad that actually, you know, you don't feel like you're like, oh, I ate something good. I feel good.
Right.
But on the road, you're like, well, I guess I'll eat this apple from the lobby. And that's it. You know, like they have some nuts in a tube.
That, according to the book, around 60% of American calories taken in are ultra-processed foods. I had no idea it was that widespread.
I believe it.
Because I think of it as like Doritos. I don't eat Doritos. You know, like I'm not eating. I'm not eating donuts out of a gas station. You know, but
no, I know what you mean.
But you do. You know, when you count in some of the other things that you kind of don't think so much about, these foods have emulsifiers and all these crazy chemical ingredients, and they're all in there to make it fluffier and stay on the shelf longer and be more delicious when you bite into them and make you want another bite. And there's just, they're just filled with chemicals that are not meant for your body.
Like Taylor Swift.
One of the things they said was the companies are not making food to nourish you. That's not even in their top 100 thoughts.
No. You know? In fact, if it nourishes you too much, you'll be done.
Right.
They actually want to give you like half of it, like just a little bit, and then be like, oh, but your body still thinks you want more because you're not
It's crazy. So that's our experiment. See if we can avoid, I mean, you're not going to be able to do it completely, but that's the exercise, to try to avoid ultra-processed foods for a month. So we'll see.
I'm curious to see how that goes.
Good luck, everybody. where can they find you, Brian Miller?
At Real Brian Miller, Funny Brian Miller, various handles. I'll be, if you're planning way ahead, I'm headlining Acme with Nate Ebshire, co-headlining Acme for New Year's Eve this year. We're doing two shows New Year's Eve, which is on a Wednesday, and then two shows Friday and Saturday each of that weekend. And I'll be headlining the Acme contest, finals. I'm not in the contest. I help run it. That'll be on the first, Wednesday in September. And then I believe I'm going to be with Eastmo in, I believe, Chicago, Milwaukee, Fargo, and Minneapolis in the fall, I think November-ish, but we don't have dates for that quite yet.
Oh, that's good routing for you. That's nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a reason they picked me to open those shows. Well, yeah. They're not in the books, but presumably I'm opening those shows still.
That's great. All right. Yeah. Kostaki.com has the info for me. Follow me on the socials. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you in a month. Okay, bye.
And off mic, I'll tell you that story, Scott.
Another good teaser. Hold on.
With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Whether you're looking to buy your dream home or rent a sweet apartment, give Redfin your gotta-have-it wish list of property features, and you'll receive real-time notifications tailored just for you. Ready to see it up close and personal? Scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Don't wait to find your perfect match. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.